We are now going to welcome our dear friend, Dan Gunther from the Northwest Ministry Network. He's going to speak to us for about 30 minutes. We've got lunch at noon. Lunch will be here at noon. We will stop by then. But Dan's going to talk with us for a little bit about crucial conversations. Let's give him one more Chi Alpha hand.
There's what people say to you, and then there's what you hear them saying. And so Stepha asked me to give a talk on the topic of crucial conversations in ministry leadership. And what I really heard her saying was, hey, would you be willing to talk about all your most painful moments and biggest failures in ministry? Because that's what it's all about. I don't claim any expertise in this topic other than having learned many lessons the hardest way possible. And I find that even though I've learned many of those lessons, I'm still learning them again the hard way. So I hope that what I have to share, and there's a book called Crucial Conversations that a lot of this material will come from, will help you learn them the slightly less hard way and save you a few challenges along the way. This first slide, I think, speaks for itself. So I've spent many years as a District Chi Alpha director. In my very first year, this is 8 or 10 years ago, I've lost count. I was mid-30s. I got a call from the local board member of a Chi Alpha group in my state in Washington. And the board members in our state, because we're all district appointed, the board members have say over who is the director and who isn't, and health of the ministry and who's hired and all that. He said, I need your help. Our Chi Alpha director is several years past retirement age. So it could receive the full Social Security paycheck. Several years past that, about 70 years old. And I'm getting calls from, this is a board member talking, I'm getting calls from the football coach on campus because our Chi Alpha director is the chaplain, and he's saying the Chi Alpha director's not welcome anymore. In fact, he doesn't relate well to students, and we've asked him to stop coming, but he keeps coming by. Would you be willing to talk with the football coach and navigate this? Board member also said the associate staff guy is saying that this director is having a hard time navigating changes in the ministry as they've implemented small groups. He doesn't get the system. And so there's conflict between the staff, associate staff, and the director. And his ministry effectiveness, the director's, has really been declining for several years anyway. Could you talk with the associate staff person? And then finally, he said, could you also come to our next board meeting with the director? I think it'll be necessary to ask the Chi Alpha director to retire. Well, I said, well, let me talk to the Chi Alpha director first before we get to that point. And so began a series of phone calls. I mean, it was 3 hours away, so I didn't drive right away there. But we started talking on the phone a couple times a week. Hey, brother, what are you thinking about the future? Are you thinking about retirement at all? Tell me what your plans are. And he'd say, I'd love to keep going. I'm loving campus ministry. And it eventually came a time where I started meeting face-to-face. I'd drive over to the campus. He'd spend a day, and he'd show me what he was doing on campus. Here we are. Here's my table in the student union building. So the long hallway, just little tables kind of individually scattered along the hallway. This is my table. And I talk to students when they come by, and, hey, Jolene, how you doing? It's good to see you. Hope you come to Chi Alpha. And, hey, Jordy, one of the football players. I'll see you at practice later today. Hey, Jordy. Conversations like that. See, Dan, I'm working really hard at getting into these students' lives. God's doing a good work. And, of course, you know, I was seeing some of the ineffectiveness at work. And, of course, I actually got to talk with the football coach, met with the associate staff, and I began to see that their impressions were mostly true about the gap between what our director was saying he was able to do and his actual effectiveness on campus. And some of that was age-related, and some of that was training-related. So the phone calls continued. Hey, brother, would you please send me a specific plan about what you're thinking for the future so that I can help your board start to prepare, because we'll want to, you know, eventually bring somebody in to take your place and take over the ministry that you've built. And it seems to me like you're getting close to retirement. I don't want to do that. There's no need to do that. Well, it kind of sounds like there's been some challenges recently. I don't know if you've heard any of those. I heard that maybe there's some challenges on the football team. Do you want to tell me a little bit about them? It's doing fine. We just had a couple bumps in the road. So we finally actually ended up in the board meeting. This is the board meeting. There's me. I'm 35, 36. There's a CAFA director who's literally twice my age. And there's a number of pastors from the section, Assemblies of God pastors, all in their 50s and 60s. And they all look at me to conduct a conversation. In summary, it went kind of like this. I struggled to conduct a conversation. Number two, a number of the pastors started leaning in heavily into this conversation. Hey, brother, we think you need to submit a plan for retirement. At when and how? How are you going to do this? What's the timeline? We need to know. And of course, he'd say, I don't want to do that. I refuse to do that. This is my job. I want to keep going until God calls me out of this. And then other pastors leaning in saying, if you can't suggest a timeline, we're going to need to do it for you. We had a second board meeting where that actually happened too, and the board gave the CAFA director a retirement plan. And he looked at all of us in the face and said, why are you doing this to me? I don't understand. In the end, they forced a retirement about age 70 or 71. I can't remember. This is 10 years ago. And I had another item on my resume to not talk about with anybody about how things had gone in our network for Chi Alpha. There were many crucial conversations on the road to that moment. You know, I've had some good follow-up conversations with this director in years since then, but many of those crucial conversations on the way did not go well. They didn't go the way I hoped. They didn't go the way I expected. I still look back and I have some regret. I regret some of the decisions I made. Some of them, I just regret the fact that I couldn't do anything else about the situation, just about being in the situation in the first place. So I hope and pray that this is never your situation, but this is, interestingly, it's not the most stressful nor the most emotionally trying circumstance I've ever been in Chi Alpha leadership as a district Chi Alpha director. So a crucial conversation, this is a definition for what a crucial conversation is, a discussion where the stakes are high. There's varying opinions and emotions run high. There's also, because there's a book by this name, there's also a follow-up book which talks about additional crucial conversations which have to do with things that involve a failure to meet expectations, disappointments, people aren't performing up to a certain level. And so there's the follow-up book is actually in the second edition called Crucial Accountability, which I think I'm very much looking forward to read because it defines exactly the situation that I was in 10 years ago. Now, I've been in many conversations over the years that were crucial, and I didn't realize that they were crucial until halfway through the conversation or near the end or later. That was a really important conversation. I didn't realize, and maybe you've been in this situation, my eyes are burning, I'm like drilled into this, moment, and we've been talking for a couple hours, and we haven't even physically moved our bodies. Have you ever been in a conversation like that? Sometimes I just haven't realized that. And the pressure in that kind of a conversation about ministry often leads to poor behaviors. So the two behaviors, one is often people fall silent, like they stop participating at a high, meaningful level in the conversation. And the other is they start pushing back, lashing out verbally. So you got silence and you got violence. Or flight, and fight. There is a high transactional cost, a relational transactional cost to a conversation like that because it affects everyone's morale. You no longer feel like you're on the same team. It affects your credibility as a leader. It affects their sense of credibility as a leader on the local campus. It affects everyone's longevity. So you can get really worn out by these kind of conversations. So our options as District Chi Alpha directors is to learn how to have useful, crucial conversations along the way that don't result in those moments, but it, being able to pull out of the option of having to get to this place where things are falling apart in the conversation. Mike Amiot wants to know the Wi-Fi password. All right, today we want to learn how to have a crucial conversation. So our options are to avoid those kind of conversations or to continue to face them poorly or to handle them well. I've handled as many poorly as I've handled well. Let's talk about trying to do them well. And this is applicable in each of your relationships with local directors. It's applicable in your conversations with district leaders or national leaders. It's applicable in your conversations with underperforming students, student leaders. I've even found that it matters occasionally when you're talking with your spouse. So we need to learn how to do this. The book here, Crucial Conversations by Carrie Patterson, I would highly recommend. There's actually a website that goes along with it called vitalsmarts.com. And I think in general that the book is just a practical application of Ephesians 4. If I could read that for a moment. Paul writes, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you've received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Bearing with one another in love means I need to learn how to work it out with you even though we're different. We're differing in our opinions. We have opposite viewpoints here, but we bear with one another until we work it out. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. I think this book in particular and this whole topic is just living out Ephesians 4. The first key, having a crucial conversation, is just knowing that you're in one. And I am serious that this is a significant key. You need to be able to recognize the signs. So for me, I recognize that my body is stiff and has been stiff for the last 15 minutes. I haven't moved. I've got kind of a mental tunnel vision. And I'm starting to observe some loaded words in the conversation. What are some other physical signs for you when you recognize, yeah, I'm in a crucial conversation now? What are some of those signs for you? Let's hear three or four. Just shout them out. Okay, yeah, that's a pre-sign. Okay. Couple more. Your voice is going up steadily, right?
Yeah, emotional escalation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Start to sweat, yeah. Get a little sweat in my forehead, sweaty palms. We're all going to have physical signs. The best thing you can do for yourself is learn to recognize those when they happen so that you can learn how to make an adjustment and dial back. It's actually better if you can have this part of your brain that says I can step out and observe myself in the conversation. And then I can, in the conversation itself, create a moment where we step out of the conversation together. You know, hey, I'm recognizing that I'm starting to feel just a little bit uncertain about the direction of our conversation. I'm getting kind of tense, and I know that's not good for me. Could we just debrief for a moment about where we're headed? And step out physically, not physically, verbally out of the conversation together to say, let's evaluate and make an adjustment. I'm feeling this right now. How are you feeling? What's coming up in you? So the second step actually is to have the discipline of stepping out of a conversation, making an adjustment together, and then stepping back in. The third step, closely tied with that, this is what you do when you step out of a conversation together, is you need to learn how to make it safe. So that's actually the underlying tension, is people are not feeling safe for whatever reason, emotionally, maybe their job's on the line, their feelings are on the line. They don't trust where your friendship is headed. This is a quote from the book. When it's safe, you can say anything. I'd like you to think about that for a second. If it's safe, you can say anything. This is the most remarkable claim in the entire book. If we could say, I need to be able to establish the firmness of our relationship right now, it's actually possible to talk about significant, important, challenging topics and have people get through that and feel like they're knitted together heart to heart with you. The problem is not the content of the conversation. The problem is the condition of the conversation. So we need to learn the skill, but people aren't feeling honored or respected. There's something in them that feels, I'm no longer safe with you. You don't feel the way, you're not honoring me the way I want to be honored. Or I'm feeling insecure about what's going to happen to my job here. Or I'm redefining the relationship as we speak. So making it safe will not ensure that you always get what you want as an end result out of the conversation. I do want to point that out. Most of the time you will get good resolve. But resolve is a two-way street. So the other person has to have the capability to make whatever change you're asking of them. And sometimes they don't fully have that capability. Sometimes they don't have the desire to make that change. You can't always get complete resolve, but a safe environment does mean that that person will be able to say, I fully understand your concern, and I don't feel threatened by it. So you can leave, and you can still be able to work on the issue, even though there's not a resolve on the issue. And I think that's important. Sometimes you can't resolve a major issue in a ministry's falling apart, or they started an IHOP ministry and it's just prayer and it's not worship, prayer, discipleship, fellowship, and mission. there's problems in their home, whatever. Those things require multiple conversations. And so if you can get safety out of the conversation now, you can keep coming back until there's resolve. I believe that's the top relationship skill. The goal is to be able to be 100% honest with each other and 100% respectful. And I do think this is a practiced skill, so please don't assume out of this talk that you're going to be able to go and create safety in the conversations. I actually think this is something that is only learned by rote, by doing it over and over again. And so if you've got people in your life where you realize, you know, when I sit down with them, I'm able to open up, like they just draw everything out of me, write down some of the things that they do that enable you to feel very safe with them. And start to model those. You have to do this over and over, and you'll get better at it at time. If you're single, I would recommend getting married. That will help you learn how to have safer conversations over time. And that's true. You know, that's easy, right? So I want to talk about a couple important disciplines. One important discipline is learning how to have dialogue, not monologue. So dialogue, if you wanted a definition for it, it's dialogue is a free flow of information and opinions. Getting all the relevant information out into the open. So one of the problems of just being human beings is that each of us processes things internally, generally. So we have our own opinions about how we've interpreted what's happened, the facts. And so we've got our own perceptions, and that's, in the book anyway, is called a pool of meaning. I have my own pool of meaning, my own way of looking at life. And you have your own way of seeing everything that we're talking about too. And those two things aren't the same. So you need an ability to get opinions, thoughts, feelings, and perspectives out into the open so we can both work at them together. That's called a shared pool of meaning. And in fact, there's a concept called group IQ, which is the ability of a group to make healthy, wise, discerning decisions. Group IQ goes down as long as people are keeping their own interpretations, experiences to themselves, and it goes up when people can share, kind of gain a common mindset about how they view things. So you need the ability to drive toward dialogue, sharing ideas, feelings, getting them all out into the open. And if people withhold meaning from each other, then we only keep reacting to your own personal way of seeing things. How many of us have been in a place where somebody is holding some cards back in a conversation? So that's the challenge, is how do we get our cards out onto the table and feel safe while we're doing that? I learned this from Gene Breitenbach. I learned because he went for years campus to campus and taught about evangelism. And I learned by rote, because he would model it, I would learn that it was helpful to get a witnessing conversation by sitting down below the level of the person that you're trying to, the stranger you're trying to start a conversation with. It was very powerful. He'd get down on the floor and he'd be, you know, looking 2 feet up at the student he was sharing with. And I learned so much from that. Changing your physical posture to demonstrate, I want to hear you. I also, the image that I personally have used is learning how to stand side by side. This is a mental image, to talk about the topic. So in other words, we don't have the topic in between us and we're facing each other and there's this kind of sense of, here's my view and here's your view, and we're trying to push against each other's views, but I try and get around and say, okay, here's the topic, kind of third person, and trying to understand it together. Just a mental image to learn how to talk together. So I will literally change the way I'm sitting. If we're cross tables, I'm going to find a corner to get on so we can even physically model what we're trying to do verbally. So you should do this when you step back. If you get into that crucial conversation moment, palms are sweaty, it's tense. Okay, actually make a physical adjustment when you step out of the conversation and talk about the conversation together. Here's a second discipline, and that's learn how to change the tone of the conversation. So, and this goes along with the image of trying to look side by side at the issue. Search for the and in the conversation. The and, A-N-D. How can I love this person and speak candidly about the issue we're trying to talk about? How can I help them make a change and they retain their dignity and they retain their sense of calling and affirmation from me? So changing the tone is important. These are really brief. There's 7 I just wrote down from the book, and I have a couple more of my own. Number one is make sure you know your own motives. What are my motives here? What do I really want? The truth is, once you get halfway into a crucial conversation and the stakes have started to go up, some other motives start to come out and, you know, start to fight against each other. And so you need to have the Lord come back and say, change this motive in you needs to change, and you need to pull out the agape motive in this conversation. Possibly the most famous phrase in classical Christendom was, know thyself that you may know God. So if you want to accomplish a good conversation, knowing where you're at, why you're in this conversation, and how you can demonstrate agape love is most helpful. Number 2, assume the best of the other person. Stepha, you've been teaching me from whoever else taught them, whomever else taught them, choose trust over suspicion. And so when you step out of a conversation, hit the reset button. Say, I need to demonstrate trust here. Assume the best. I mean, perhaps they're not aware of the shortcomings that I'm trying to address. That's often true. They just see it differently, not to recognize that it's a shortcoming. So be curious. Curiosity is your best friend. Number 3, learn how to talk face-to-face whenever possible. I love the comment about doing a SWAT face-to-face. Do it voice-to-voice if you can't do it face-to-face. So, you know, do the Zoom or get a phone call. I mean, you're trying to start from the highest quality level of relationship and process at the highest level that way. Also privately. I mean, sometimes people just don't like being exposed in front of others. So trying to increase the amount of personal interaction. Number four, start with facts. So again, one of the biggest challenges of having your own pool of meaning and not getting out into the shared pool with them of how they see things is often your conclusions about what's going on need to be adjusted. You don't have a monopoly on the truth. And so you need to start with, well, so I heard you say this and this and this. What did you mean by that? As opposed to jumping to what you think they meant by that. That really helps people feel honored and they can put their interpretation into the pool so you can learn to talk together. What did you mean by that? Or, you know, here's some of the numbers that you're able to share about your campus. Tell me about what you think about them. Number five, share your point of view tentatively. I think that just goes along with the fact that you start with facts and not your own conclusions, perceptions. Ask how they see the issue. Number six, learn how to mirror and give feedback. So this is a really important skill. It starts with what I always thought was a really trite phrase, but I've learned to use it every single time, and that's what I hear you saying is. That is the best phrase in the world for helping a conversation move forward. And that's called, when you say give feedback, that's what I mean. I mean what I hear you saying is. I don't mean, here's my perspective on what you just said. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to say, in my own words, tell me if I've got your point of view right. And number seven is find points of agreement. So in other words, if you can say, we're on the same team, so let's find a common motive. We both love Jesus. Both trying to serve the kingdom. We both love this campus you're on. Start with some common points of agreement. Then you can disagree much more effectively because we both want to accomplish the same goal. I'd love if you just took 1 second here and skimmed that real quick and said, oh, bang, that one stands out as my weak point. Yes, Jerry.
Say that, saying the same thing, is help me understand.
Yep, that's good.
Yeah.
I wanted to skip to some important skills for a district half a director specifically, just because we are all in some high level conversations and it's not all just with our spouse, but sometimes it's things that we need a record of and we need to be able to process and come back to with people who are professionals in ministry themselves. Number one is I think it's important to log what you do as a district Chi Alpha director in some way. Just even if it's jotting down notes about each conversation and just sticking that away for the future. Jotting down some notes, being able to, at the end of a conversation, say, hey, let's go back. Could we summarize what you and I understood that we decided today. What did we say? Now, I think often that can be done verbally, but sometimes I felt like the conversation was important enough that I needed to summarize via a longer form thing. So I'd put it in an email and say, hey, could you just double check and make sure that I understood our conversation right? So I use email to provide a summary. We both have a record of what we talked about and the important conclusions that we came to and the action points that we left with as well. Number two, though, is it's best not to process over email. So I will sometimes summarize over email so we have a record, but that is not the place to process new ideas or make decisions or process different points of view. Neither is Facebook or Snapchat. However you would do that. You got to process face to face. So email's just a summary tool for me, only when I need it. Yeah, Steve.
You send them a summary email saying, this is what I understand, but they can't process it back to you saying, no, that's not what I meant. They have to call you? Or if they email you back and say, no, that's not it, it's this, this, this. And you say, oh.
Yeah, if they do that, then I'll say, hey, well, let's get on the phone.
They started processing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll pause and go back to processing a bit more, and I'll try a summary again. The record sometimes turns out to be very important. So without describing any of the situations in my life. Sometimes it's just really helpful to go back and say, here's what we agreed on paper, so to speak, on email. So I do want to do more than just their notes and my notes in our mental memory at times when it's really important things. But I'll step out of the email. Thank you, Steve. I'll step out of the email string until we make sure we're summarizing better. Number three is have help when needed. So I think help, the best help is within the organizational tree. Who is your, you know, if you're a local Chi Alpha director, then who's your DCAD? If you're a DCAD, who's your area director? If you're an area director, who's your field director? Who's your field director? also, it's helpful to have help that's appropriate. There's some appropriate boundaries, so it's not just, I'm trying to process all this with my spouse, and my spouse said this, and I'm bringing it back into the conversation. No, it's you want to bring somebody who's got covering, who's providing covering for your overall conversation with the person. Sometimes it's a district-related issue, if it's related to credentials or how they're doing morally. Maybe you'd process that with a district leader as well. But have help when needed. And I would say keep it within Chi Alpha if at all possible, because we've got good relational systems to help each other out. And finally, number four, this goes back to Matt Springer's whole conversation. You'll prevent a lot of crucial conversations, or you provide a better basis for them if you just have a system for good ministry leadership feedback. So doing an annual evaluation or a semester evaluation about where are we at different levels, not just local ministry, but where it's even, you could even do this in your relationships with Chi Alpha directors. What's your system of feedback? Could you do an evaluation? Could you use a national system, a tool that's being provided, a 360 review? Included in that is a recommendation that I think did come from Stefa, and I'm fully embracing now, which is have regular personal visits with each of your Chi Alpha directors. And that, so building that relationship over time will just give you more platform for having tough conversations. There we go. There's a chapter in the book called How to Make and Agree on Decisions. I really want to read that. So it's chapter 9 in the book. I think you should do it too, because how do you go forward is an important aspect of this as well.